a special character. Just as when you write poetry, there's a form of poetry. There should be rhythmic word, isn't it? That is the most important thing in poetry. There should be rhythmic word. There should be vision of the truth. There should be style. Then only it becomes poetry. Similarly, there is something like a philosophical statement. If I say write philosophical essay on a certain subject, how does it differ from a personal essay, for example? You know, personal essay is a form of writing. Then there is a critical essay, there is another form of essay. Now if I ask you write a philosophical essay, what is the characteristic of a philosophical essay? So the most important aspect of philosophical essay is, and this is my question, I won't answer, blank. You take, for example, the first paragraph of The Life Divine, which you now know quite well. Why is it a philosophical statement? The very first paragraph is a philosophical statement. Why is it so? That is my question. We have discussed it already. I don't want that you should answer this question, but help me in answering the question. It is a statement which consists of philosophical argument. And I have said there are many forms of philosophical arguments. And while discussing it, I had said that the first paragraph has two philosophical arguments. Now try to recollect. I had said there are two philosophical arguments in the first paragraph. If you remember, I had told you there are two important words in this paragraph. One is. There is one word, it simply is. Another word which is important is seems. Another word which is equivalent almost to seems is promises. Right? So there are two words which are the key to the answer to my question. The word is, where is the word is, you tell me. Good. Is also what the highest thought can envisage. Right. This word is very important. I told you at that time, now underline it. It gives you one form of a philosophical argument, and I told you what kind of argument it is, if you remember. If you don't, I will go with you again. I told you I'll give a name to that argument. Whenever an argument deals with the nature of thought, and as you can see, it is concerning the nature of thought, it is also what the highest thought can envisage. So it is concerning the nature of thought. So whenever an argument deals with the nature of thought, anything that is derived from the nature of thought is called philosophical argument of what kind? Because there are many philosophical arguments. It's a philosophical argument, but there is a special type of philosophical argument. It is called either a logical argument or an epistemological argument. That is because logic is a part of epistemology. So if you say it's a logical argument or epistemological argument, it's the same thing because it concerns the nature of thought. Or there is another argument, seems, promises. Pardon? Good. It's a historical argument. So you have already two forms of argument, philosophical arguments. It can be logical argument, it can be historical argument. I had then spoken of a third form of an argument. Pardon? Good. Excellent. Dialectical argument. There is a third form of an argument. Now, I shall ask you to explain to me what is a dialectical argument. A dialectical argument is a difficult question, therefore I am myself proceeding further. Pardon?
Logical.
It's a logical argument, or dialectical argument is a logical argument but has a special characteristic.
But it's not reflexive.
It is?
Not vice versa.
Logical argument, there are many kinds of, that is another argument. All planets move around the sun. Therefore, all that moves around the sun are planets. This is not a correct argument. It's not vice versa. It's also a logical argument, but it's a logical argument which is a fallacy in conversion. It's a special name for it. It's a conversion, but a fallacious conversion. When you do vice versa, it's a fallacy in conversion. So that is an extra argument which we had illustrated one time. But dialectical argument has a special nature. Yes?
The dialectical argument starts with one set of facts which leads up to a contrary set of facts, and together you have to find a synthesis.
Good, excellent. I think all of you will agree, no? Dialectical argument is one in which you first of all state one set of facts from which another set of facts is derived, or you state another set of facts which is opposite to the first set of facts, leading up to a necessity to find a conclusion which will be a synthesis. That is a dialectical argument. I am extremely happy. This is a good statement of a dialectical argument. Now illustrate this argument from the second paragraph. There is a set of facts, namely the ideals of God, light, freedom, immortality. It's a one set of facts. So this is a statement of one set of facts, ideals of God, light, freedom, immortality. Now, which is set against another set of facts? Which is other set of facts? Good, excellent. This set of facts is contradicted. It is in opposition to another set of facts which are deliverances of the ordinary experience. Good, you have got now two sets of facts. Now, how are you going to arrive at a synthesis? This is the basic structure of the second paragraph. How are you going to harmonize these two? Anybody can tell me how? Yes, yes.
You said how you
to harmonize these two.
By discussing and trying to find a solution or whatever. And if you cannot find a solution, make your sentences of both arguments.
Quite right, absolutely. Now tell me, what is the solution that is found by Sri Aurobindo? One solution, Sri Aurobindo says, is proposed by the material intellect, which says that ideals are invalid. That is the solution. Material intellect, trying to see these two opposites, says that the opposite of this is invalid. That's a solution. Right? The argument is material intellect takes for granted that our present state of consciousness is the highest possibility of consciousness. Therefore, anything that proposes going beyond those possibilities is impossible, therefore invalid. So, the solution is by cutting out this. It's not a real synthesis, but it's a kind of a solution. This is valid, this is invalid. It's not a real synthesis. But in a process of argumentation, you can say now that is the end of the argument. Unless you bring another argument, it is an end of the argument. Now Sri Aurobindo continues the argument. And proposes a synthesis. Now, what is Sri Aurobindo's argument? But if we take, now fill up the gaps. Good. If we take a deliberate view, they underline the word deliberate. Deliberate view of the workings of the world, then so Sri Aurobindo starts an argument by the use of deliberative view. That's a very important word. I had given a special word for that argument also. When you use the word deliberate view, I had underlined that word and said that this is a special kind of an argument. You remember what I had said, I said that this is a new argument that Sri Aurobindo now puts forward. I had said that this is the quintessential metaphysical argument, the quintessential philosophical argument. And I had explained why it is a quintessential metaphysical argument. Now try to recollect why I say it's a quintessential metaphysical argument. If you take a deliberate view of the workings of nature, only this word, if you take a deliberate view, I had told you that philosophy, Anandamayi had read out particularly that word, that philosophy is a quest of knowledge, totality, and then I had come to that word where I had stopped. Now you remember that word.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Philosophy is basically a search of meaning of facts. Therefore, any question that raises the question of meaning is the quintessential philosophical argument. It is a fundamental philosophical argument. When you ask the question, what is the real meaning of it? Now, Sri Aurobindo says, when you ask, when you take a deliberate view, what's a deliberate view means what? To take a deliberate view is to ask the question of the meaning. So if you ask the question, what is the meaning of this opposition? So the argument now turns upon this, upon meaning. According to the material intellect, the very fact there is opposition, it means that one is right, another is wrong. That's the material argument. Now Sri Aurobindo says, no, that is, we are not taking a deliberate view of things. Why opposition at all? Before you said that this is right, therefore that is wrong, that statement is wrong because you are not taking the quintessential metaphysical position. You ask a question, why there is opposition at all between the two? So Sri Aurobindo says, if you examine this opposition between the realized facts and unrealized ideals, you ask a question, why there is opposition between the actualized fact and the unrealized ideals? If you take a meaningful question, if you raise a question of why there is opposition, then Sri Aurobindo says your conclusion will be, now tell me, what is the conclusion? The conclusion will be
that direct opposition appears rather as part of nature's profoundest method and the seal of a completest sense.
Excellent. That is the real conclusion. If you ask what is the meaning of this opposition, then Sri Aurobindo says, if you examine this way, you will find that this opposition is actually nature's method. It's nature's method of bringing them together. Not denial of one or the other. It is the ultimate aim of this opposition is to arrive at a synthesis. That is the aim, if you examine.